Welcome everyone to this day of the digital audiobook. My name is Tom Peters, one of the presenters. Before we get started, I'd like to turn it over to Lisa Barnhart from Library U, who's going to give us a few words of welcome. So Lisa, over to you.
Good morning, everyone, and we're so excited just to welcome you to the day of the digital audiobook. It sometimes feels like it was never going to come, but the day has arrived. We have over 190 people registered throughout the day, probably about 150 average in each session. So we welcome you, and again, I'm Lisa Barnhart, the project coordinator for Library U. And I just want to let you know that this is our first event in a partnership with OPAL that we're calling Library U Live. We look forward to having a lot more opportunities like this to do some blended learning experiences. Just a little something about logistics today. At the end of each session, except for the brown bag session, we will be drawing for a play away that we're going to give away. So if you stick around during your session, at the end of that session, we'll be drawing a random number, and you do have to be present virtually in order to win. So again, welcome, and I'm going to turn it back to Lori and Tom.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. Hopefully you all are seeing the sort of our welcome day and our itinerary for today's series of discussions. We know we're all in different time zones, but I'm here in the central time zone, and it's now shortly after 9 in the morning. So in this, for the next hour here, we're going to talk briefly about kind of an overview of the whole digital audiobook movement, so we all get some basic background information. Then we'll take a break for an hour and come back at 11 a.m. Central. That would be noon Eastern, 10 Mountain, and 9 Pacific. And we'll sort of shift gears and talk about what libraries, groups of libraries, consortia, state organizations should be thinking about as they consider seriously offering a digital audiobook service for their patrons. So we'll talk about things like pricing and how to gauge demand and all the different options available to you there, different file types and whatnot, how to get technical support. Then, at least in the central time zone, it'll be time for lunch. So whether it's a brown bag luncheon or high tea in your time zone or midnight snack or early breakfast or whatever, we'll have a little time to just discuss informally online several of the projects that are ongoing right now involving different types of digital audiobooks. And then beginning at 3 Eastern, 2 Central, 1 Mountain, and noon Pacific, we'll have shift gears again and talk for an hour or so about how you can actually implement a digital audiobook service in your library consortium, however you decide to do it. So we'll also focus on specific vendors and some of the key attributes of what those vendors are offering to libraries and library users. So that's the overall plan for today. We're going to have plenty of time for question and discussion. We'll ask you, if you do have a question that pops into your head, feel free to type it in the text chat. We have people who are monitoring the questions that come across. And then Lori Bell and I will pause periodically and try to address some of your questions. So let's dive into this first thing here. One other thing is I do have synchronized browsing on at my end, so I can advance all of these slides. We have a large number of HTML pages to point to you today. So you really can sit back and listen and think about digital audiobooks in your library and in your state. Just a couple of things as background information. We're very pleased to be offering this Day of the Digital Audiobook, which for us is the inaugural online event in what we're calling Library U Live, which the goal is to provide a blended experience of self-paced web-based instruction with live online presentations and discussions. So today is the live and online part of it, and what we'll be going through today is really the sort of beta versions of three self-paced web-based instructional modules that will be available for Library U users to use from here on out. So in a way, you're all kind of getting a peek at these modules as they're in their final stages of being created. Library U Live is a collaborative effort between Library U, which provides free web-based training for librarians and their patrons, and OPAL, online programming for all libraries and all library users, which offers a wide array of live online programs for librarians and library users worldwide. Funding for Library U, the URL is learning.libraryu.org, has been provided by the Illinois State Library, which is a division of the Secretary of State and State Librarian, using federal LSTA funds. Library U Reloaded is funded by a Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation training grant awarded to the Illinois State Library. Content development and support for Library U is provided by the Illinois Regional Library Systems, ILSDO, the Illinois Library Systems Directors Organization, and the Illinois State Library. OPAL, the URL for OPAL is www.opal-online.org, receives generous support from the Alliance Library System in Central Illinois, the Illinois State Library Talking Book and Braille Service, and from the annual membership dues of more than 35 organizational members in three countries on three continents. As I mentioned, one goal of the Day of the Digital Audiobook is to introduce the participants today to the three new modules being added to the Library U curriculum about digital audiobooks. These modules are designed to be provided self-paced, web-based instruction. What we're showing you today are really just sort of screenshots, not the actual modules themselves, which are much more interactive. And Lori and Lisa will be providing more information towards the end of the sessions today about these self-paced modules and when they'll be available for official use. One thing I do want you to note is that this online session and all of today's sessions are being recorded and will be added to the OPAL archive soon after the completion of today's live online events. The archive will also be incorporated in the Library U online courses developed for this Day of the Digital Audiobook. And for those of you who are into podcasting, we will podcast the audio portion of these recordings later today or tomorrow. For those of you who just joined us, if you do experience any technical problems or have procedural questions during this online session, please right-click on the tech support person who's listed in the other participants in the lower left area of the screen. This will enable you to send a private text chat message to obtain technical support. The tech support person's real name is Dawn, so Dawn is waiting to help you get going with any problems you might have. And as Lisa already mentioned, later in this session, towards the end of this session, we're going to have a random drawing to give away a new PlayAway self-contained digital audiobook device. These things are really pretty interesting. If you haven't had an opportunity to learn about PlayAways, they're very interesting. But you must be in your virtual seat to in this room at the time of the drawing to win. So must be present to win. Okay, we have two presenters for the session this morning here, this inaugural session in the Day of the Digital Audiobook. My name is Tom Peters. Back in 2003, I founded a company called Tap Information Services, www.tapinformation.com. And basically, I've been a librarian for 18 years now, believe it or not. And what I do is I provide services supporting libraries, library consortia, government agencies, publishers, and other what I like to call information-intensive organizations. I'm basically an academic librarian by training and inclination and experience. I've worked at a number of institutions of higher education in the Midwest area. And you can read the rest about that. I've been interested in the adoption and diffusion of information technologies since Hector was a pup. The other presenter today is Lori Bell, so I'll let Lori introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Lori Bell. I work with the Alliance Library System, and previously I was director of the Mid-Illinois Talking Book Center, where we did a lot of projects with digital audiobooks for our visually impaired users who were excited to get some new content to add to their talking books. So I'm excited about today and glad to be here. Thank you for coming.
Okay, so let's dive into our topic. Our topic for this session is what's out there and how can we begin to make sense of a rapidly evolving digital audiobook market. One thing to think about is that audiobooks, the popularity of audiobooks is really pretty impressive. When I sort of look at overall U.S. publishing fiscal information, overall publishing is a bit flat in terms of revenues. There's some modest increase, but it barely keeps up with the cost of the rate of inflation. But the audio publishing sector of the overall publishing market is quite healthy. And so whenever you see an area that's has healthy gains in revenue and user adoption, you're going to see a lot of companies get into the audiobook market, and that's exactly what we're seeing happening right now. Audiobooks include, of course, they sort of started with books on tape. Actually, going way back, it was books on vinyl, on records, but sort of in the library land, books on tape got started. Then it was books on CDs. You can still buy books on CDs. But also, what we're really going to focus on today are downloadable digital audiobooks and other types of digital audiobooks, which people can listen to on computers, on any number of a wide variety of handheld devices, or even in some instances, the publishers or copyright holders have allowed users to burn these audiobooks onto a set of CDs. So more about all this, we'll delve into this deeper as we get into the topic here. But that's the way to, that's sort of how we got to where we are. As we begin our, what I call an environmental scan of the digital audiobook market, one thing that I always try to note is when I encounter a vendor, I try to understand what are they offering and to whom are they offering it. What I mean is that some vendors will sell or lease their content exclusively to the end user market. They're trying to sell to individuals. Others sell or lease their content exclusively to the library or institutional market. It really is more than a library market because I know, for example, the military is very interested in digital audiobooks because they have people stationed around the world. They do have some time on their hands, and they are very interested in digital audiobooks. So it's more than just the libraries are, as institutions are interested in this. And then some vendors try to sell or lease their content to both markets. So as you begin to explore the digital audiobook market, one way that I try to make sense of it is to try to understand, you know, to whom is each vendor trying to market their services. So I assume that most of us in here are librarians or affiliated with libraries in some way. So to get a sense of how this got into libraries, the Library of Congress has a division called the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And they've been providing audiobooks for eligible readers since 1931. So they've been around for a long time. And since the 1970s on audio cassettes. But it wasn't really until the 80s that audiobooks entered sort of the mainstream library market. So the library audiobook market has been around for about 20, 25 years now. It started off with books on tape. It moved to the CDs as CDs became the sort of dominant mode of distribution of digital content. And it really wasn't until about 2004, 2005, to put a little tighter timeline on it, it was really around in November of 2004 that we started to see some viable systems and services available whereby libraries could offer digital audiobooks to their patrons. So that's only been about 15 months ago. So the thing we're talking about today is still very much in its infancy. And like any infant, it squirms around quite a bit and grows and changes rapidly. And that's what we're seeing with the digital audiobook market as it pertains to libraries. You know, one thing that interests me is the evolution of technologies. And one thing that I've noticed is that whenever something new comes down the pike, there's almost always an early format war. It's like something in human nature or something that we have to have, you know, beta versus VHS. We have to have AM radio versus FM radio. We have to have the IBM PC versus the Apple computer. It almost seems inevitable that we have some sort of a format war or some kind of a hardware combat as a new technology emerges. Audio content is the same way. There are a lot of file formats out there now. We've just listed a few here just to give you a sense of what's available. MP3 is probably the most well-known file format that's out there.
Also, it's important to take note of these formats as we talk about them because people get MP3 players and not every format will play on every player. Just as Tom said, not with the different formats of videos and computer operating systems, not everything will work with everything else.
Right, so MP3 is probably the most popular audio file format out there now, but there are other ones as well. The Windows Media Audio format is used for a lot of different types of computers and portable playback devices. Apple and their iPod line have a proprietary format for their audio content. And one of the things that we'll be talking about throughout the day is what I call the iPod impasse, where iPod devices will not play Windows media audio files. And yet some of the really, I think, mainstream audiobook services for libraries are using the Windows Media Audio or WMA file format. There are other file formats out there. One of my favorite named file formats is Ogg Vorbis. It's an open source codec, which a lot of audio files say that it has really good audio quality. There are some Ogg Vorbis digital audiobooks available around, but it really overall right now is pretty much a minor format. One other one I want to mention, it's really not a file format, is my understanding, but it's more of a markup language, is DAISY, spelled just like the flower. It's a worldwide effort to develop a markup language for audio content and as well as printed ebooks that will enable nonlinear navigation in a very robust way. So the DAISY is a sort of another thing to think about as we think about the file formats. The bottom line here is that there are a lot of competing file formats, and not all devices will play all the supported file formats. So you really have to be careful when you're looking at a service to make sure that it's going to be meet the needs of your patrons and what they're expecting from your digital audiobook service. Okay, there's a lot of different ways that you can listen to these things. You can listen to them on your PC, your desktop computer, or your laptop computer. There are a lot of free media players, software players out there that you can download onto your computer. Windows Media Player is one from Microsoft. Music Max Jukebox is another one. Most of these are free. There are probably dozens, if not hundreds, of these computer systems out there. I'm sorry, software programs out there. And they will play different types of audio files as well as video files. Winamp is another one. There's a lot of them out there. If you want to listen to audiobooks on your computer, usually it's entirely possible to do that using free downloadable software. Some vendors, such as Audible.com, have proprietary file formats, and they will provide some software to you if you subscribe or if your library has a subscription to Audible.com. They will provide the software that will play their content. Some vendors, such as Overdrive, will also provide some playback software for your computer that enhances the ability of users to interact with the downloadable digital audiobooks. We'll talk more about some of the functionality and things, but Overdrive realizes that most of these software media players are designed for music, primarily, and maybe video secondarily, but not for navigating through an audiobook. So they come up with a thing called the Overdrive Media Console that tries to enhance that experience. Such as nonlinear navigation, variable speed playback, and other things we'll be talking about throughout the day.
Tumble Books requires that a book be read online on the internet. They say they're working on the capability of downloading, but it will be downloaded to a computer, not a handheld player. The Tumble Books, they have several different kinds of Tumble Books. They're based on the free Flash software, and they have animated audiobooks for children grades K through 4, where the text is highlighted as someone reads it. They have audiobooks that you can listen to online. They have large print books where somebody can customize the font they're looking at from like 16 to 34 point. And then they also have Tumble read-alongs, which contain both the audio and the print of a book. So especially for people who are learning English as a second language or, you know, having literacy problems, the Temple read-alongs might work well for them. The other thing about Temple, and we'll talk more about this in another session, is that a whole class can be on a book in a computer lab at a time. So Temple Books is just a different model of audiobook.
So I think most people, when they think of downloadable digital audiobooks, they're thinking about, you know, you download it, you transfer it to a device, and you basically engage in offline listening of that digital audiobook. But the point here is that there really are some options for both online and offline listening, online being through the streaming audio. Some vendors will actually offer streaming snippets of audiobooks, you know, a few minutes of a book just as a sample. They'll let you that'll help you to decide, you or your end users decide, if you like the writing style, the topic, the narrator's voice, all those types of things before you make a checkout or download decision. So, and I think NetLibrary, for example, is even offering all of their books either for downloading and offline listening, or you can actually stream it right online if you want to and not have to download it onto your local computing device. One big thing about, one advantage of streaming content is that the playback begins almost immediately. Whatever software system you're using usually buffers a few seconds of the audio content and then begins playing it back. So that's one real advantage of the streaming. One downside, obviously, is you have to be connected to the internet at all times to participate in that streaming content, audio content. But the point here is that there's both online and offline listening opportunities. Sometimes all jumbled together within the same vendor's platform and listing of offerings. Okay, the second big way to listen to this content is on these portable playback devices, things like MP3 players, personal digital assistants, PDAs, some of the new portable video devices will have them. Even some of the new ebook devices, dedicated ebook readers, are having audio capabilities built into them so that you could, in theory, read a book or listen to a book, or do both at the same time. So there's some really interesting possibilities here. Again, the thing to note is that not all PDAs can play all file types. So that's another reason to pay attention to the audio formats. As we already mentioned, the iPod will not play the Windows Media Audio files. And so for libraries, this is a big decision because, as someone pointed out in text chat already, the iPod has a significant share of the overall portable music playing device market. Last I saw, it's dropping a little bit. I think it's still up around 75% of the overall market. So some of these players that are out there are a lot of others, hundreds of other types of players out there. Most of them will play Windows Media Audio file formats, but currently the iPod line does not. So that's a big problem here. When selecting a player or a PDA or cell phone or whatever it is you're going to do, it is important to think about what else you want to do with that player and what functions you want to have available. A lot of players do other things as well. One example is the Creative Mouveau line are also flash drives or thumb drives for carrying data. So you can actually just carry around files if you want to, as well as audio files, music files, and other types of files as well. Some of these MP3 players also serve as FM radios. On some of them you can record a radio broadcast or local voices such as a lecture or discussion. A new trend in MP3 players is to include a small screen for displaying static and moving images, digital photos, music videos, TV shows, movies. So we're seeing a lot of convergence now as we watch all these devices hit the marketplace. And like I said, I think the one overarching theme for the whole situation is it's a rapidly evolving kind of rough and tumble Greco-Roman kind of wrestling match going on right now. And who knows when the marketplace will settle down, but it is a pretty volatile marketplace right now.
I just wanted to chime in on that, Tom. At Alliance Library System, we wanted to do a group purchase for our libraries because we got a subscription to My Media Mall for our online libraries. And we chose a line of the Creative Mouveau that had a lot of different features. And by the time we placed our order, that particular type was not being sold anymore. So we had to find another of the MOVOs that had the features that we had advertised for the group purchase and make another purchase. I also wanted to say that a lot of people don't know that there are over 500 devices that'll play Windows Media Audio, and placeforsure.com is a great place to take users so they can look at players based on cost, the different features that they want in a player, and also device size. Some of these players are really tiny, and a lot of people like those, but some people want something a little bigger. So, and also price. So placeforsure.com is a great place to go to look at the over 500 devices that will play Windows audio, and you can, you know, look at what they can do to help you decide what you want.
So a few more thoughts about these portable playback devices. You know, libraries and library consortia are doing different things. Some libraries are saying, well, it's the user's responsibility to select and purchase a portable playback device. All we're supplying is the content and the metadata and associated services. Other libraries are experimenting with actually having library-owned devices that patrons can check out, and either the librarian or library staff member will load the content on there, or the user will load it to him or herself. I imagine there'll be, if there aren't already, there'll be some libraries and library consortia that might offer perhaps discounts on a certain line of MP3 player to help their user population to be able to afford the purchase of these things. So there's a lot of different ways you can slice and dice the MP3 and other portable playback thing. But just some things to consider, whether it's your library considering this, or you're maybe providing some guidance to users, is that you want to think, of course, about the cost. And overall, the cost is, I think, across this entire device line is falling, and because it's such a competitive market. You know, the capacities increase, but the price doesn't increase that much. So that's another way to sort of gauge falling prices. Overall, I think that the mini hard drive devices, the big 30, 40, 50 gigabyte portable playback devices, the cost per gigabyte is lower than for the flash type of devices. One thing that I really like about the flash type devices is that there are no moving parts, so you have some real real sort of inherent gains in durability in a flash-based device because there's nothing moving there. As we've already mentioned, think about the other capabilities that you want to have in that device beyond just playing back digital audiobooks. Let's not kid anybody. One of the main reasons people buy these portable playback devices is not for audiobooks, but for music. And so being able to blend listening to music with listening to audiobooks on the same device is very attractive to people. So think about the capabilities you want to have. Most of these devices operate on either replaceable batteries or rechargeable batteries or some sort of embedded battery. So battery power, battery life is very important thing to think about. Are you going to have to be constantly replacing those batteries, or can you listen to a good length audiobook on a single battery? It's amazing how long-lived a lot of these devices are with the battery power, but it is something to think about. Also think about device size. Again, we'll talk more about this in some of the later sessions, but you know, people are using these things for, you know, sort of radically different purposes and sort of venues for listening to things. Some people are commuters, some people are exercise enthusiasts, some people like to listen in the comfort of their easy chairs at home. There's a lot of different places where people are listening to audiobooks, and device size, it can be an important consideration. Another bullet point I would add here is think about accessibility too, because Laurie and I have had some experience trying to improve the accessibility of information technology, both on the software and hardware side, especially for people who are blind or visually impaired. And it's really, overall, I'd say it's a sad tale, where a lot of these mainstream devices are just not very accessible for people with any kind of visual impairment or might not have some fine motor skills, especially in their hands. These are tend to be very tiny devices, and consequently very tiny buttons on them. And so think about the accessibility as you sort of look across this vast sea of devices that are hitting the general consumer marketplace. Okay, every once in a while, let's, after this slide here, let's stop for some question and answer. I just want to mention that CD burning is another way of listening to this audio content. Some of these vendors and some of the copyright holders are allowing readers to download audio content and burn it to a set of CDs. And the emphasis here is on set, because usually it requires 8, 10, 12 CDs to get one audiobook onto. So it's almost a decision being made on a publisher by publisher basis. So a lot of people like to do that though, and so that's another thing to think about, another sort of way to do this. Personally, I think that CDs as a storage medium and distribution medium are, their days are numbered. I don't know what that number is, but I think that their days are numbered, as the day of the era of the CD will eventually come to an end. But for the time being, it is a third viable way to listen to and carry around digital audiobooks. So I think before we talk about some of the features and functionality of these books, I think this might be a good place to pause and see if try to address some of the questions I've come across. Or you also can press and hold your control key if you have a microphone connected to your PC and express your comment or question using voice over IP. So let's pause here for a moment.
Tom, one question that I received from Jan T. She's wanting to know, when will books on tape start getting into digital audiobooks?
You know, each distributor, I guess, you know, I'm not privy to the business plans and timelines of each distributor, but I think it's safe to say that every distributor of digital audio content ought to be thinking about downloadable digital audio and some of these new methods for distribution of digital audiobooks. I'm always hesitant to make predictions and especially threatening predictions, but I would think that if a company isn't seriously thinking about some of these new distribution methods, I would wonder about the long-term viability of their company, because I think it's going to be an interesting next 10 or 15 years in this whole industry and marketplace. But I think that overall, I can't help but think that distribution of things on CD will decline as a percentage of market share.
I think, too, right now it's a really difficult time for libraries, because audiobooks, they can buy them for their readers on cassette, on CD, now downloadable, and also play away. And a lot of people who listen on cassette really like that. They don't want to change. And then when you look at the downloadable, many people don't have computers or are intimidated about downloading a book. So I think the next few years, are tough for libraries, as you have to decide how to spend your money on offering audiobooks. Mary, we are very close to video on demand. Overdrive, which is one of the vendors we'll talk more in detail about later, has announced that they are working on video on demand. So when you offer Overdrive digital audiobooks, they're also offering music to libraries, and they will be offering video on demand. Right now, these are mostly educational videos, but they're just getting started with that. I think they protect copyright through their software, digital rights management that they put with the software, and I don't know enough about the video to say any more about that. Anybody else?
I think Mary's question is good, and I think that, even though I've already sort of put a nail in the coffin of the CD, I would also put maybe a nail in the coffin of portable MP3 players, because I think the next big thing will be portable media players that play both video and audio content, or a blend of both, that I think will eventually supplant the MP3 players. You know, you could read a book, you can watch a movie, you can watch a TV show, you can watch a music video, you can listen to a book, you could listen to a lecture. I mean, there's all kinds of content that you could bring down to a portable media player that I think if the price point gets down to the point that a lot of people can seriously consider it, I think that that will eventually overtake the MP3 player, the sort of rule supreme right now. Vicky's question here is, has there been an exploration of synthesizing or synchronizing audio with text on portable devices to improve literacy? That's a great question, and I really think that that's sort of where we might be headed. We'll talk a little bit more about what Tumble Books have been doing in this area, but as Laurie already mentioned, they're doing some very interesting things where, for example, you can have the text displayed on your screen. You can modify the size of the text, let's say if you have some vision challenges, and you can toggle on and off an audio narration of the text that you're reading. So just imagine how maybe someone with vision problems could be looking at listening at the same time to a book being read to them, or someone who's learning to read English for the first time, whether it's a young person learning to read or an adult in some sort of a adult literacy program, or someone who's learning English or another language for the first time. Imagine the ability to, you know, have a portable device that had both the audio and the text of a book available to you in a very malleable way, so that you can increase the size of the text. You could have maybe like the text that's being read highlighted or backlit or something as you move along. There's almost infinite possibilities here with combining audiobook technology with ebook technology onto the portable devices. So that's a very good question.
To address Heather's question too, which is excellent, I think right now with all the audio formats that are available, it's confusing for our patrons. It's also confusing for librarians. There is no one format that accommodates everybody out there right now. I think that the audiences are pretty divided in what they're using. I don't even know what percentage is using cassette as opposed to CD as opposed to downloadable digital audio. And it's difficult to make a decision what format to offer in, you know, when budgets are being cut and things like that.
Kathy's question, or really kind of, I guess it's an expression of hope that there will be a move toward uniformity in audio format so that Apple iPods can play WMA files. Yeah, I'd like to hope that we'll eventually get to that point. You know, I spoke early on about the what seems to be almost the inevitable format war that happens when a new technology emerges. But I think as the industry matures, I think that we'll start to see hopefully some convergence or interoperability. Someone typed in tech chat earlier that there's sort of backwoods or backroom ways to do that now, but sort of more legitimate, seamless ways to convert content so that ideally one device would be able to play all the major contents. It's really unfortunate, and I don't want to, you know, cast stones or point fingers at any particular vendor, but some vendors have chosen kind of the proprietary buy from our store, our online store, use our devices, use our content, kind of a lockdown one stream, sort of content stream and service stream. Other vendors are trying to gather content in a wide variety of formats and from a wide variety of content suppliers. So it's basically two different business models, and you know, who knows which one will win out. But I guess if I were a betting person, I would bet on the multiple types of content, multiple file formats, kind of the openness type of way that eventually will win out. But unfortunately, all of us librarians and library users sort of have to suffer through the format wars. Pamela, this is Tom. I couldn't hear you, so you might have to type your question or comment in a text chat. Lisa, any other, I know a lot of questions have come across while we were talking. Any other thing that you want to bring up at this point?
Actually, I think there's been a response to each one, but I did just type into the text chat that we do have an additional Q&A time scheduled, and that is on February 28th from 1 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time to 2:30 in this same room. So if you have questions that aren't answered today, Lori and Tom will be available at that time.
Okay, let's move on here because we only have about 15 minutes left in this section. Another thing to think about is sort of what are the advantages, what are some of the inherent advantages of and sort of functionality of digital audiobooks, looking across all of these things we've talked about, these different parameters, what are some of the things to think about? The first one I think is a big one for me is what I call placeholding. This is basically the feature that allows your computer or playback device or whatever combination of hardware and software you're using to return to the place wherever you quit listening to that digital audiobook and pick it up again right at that point. Believe it or not, this is not a uniform ability right now across all of the offerings. Sometimes you revert back to the beginning of a section when you turn off the device and turn it back on. Sometimes you revert all the way back to the beginning of the book. So it's not, it seems like a no-brainer to say, well, when you turn it off and turn it back on, it should continue on where you left off. It's not. Unfortunately, that we're not to that point yet where that always happens. Another, and this is not as easy and as cut and dried as you would first think. Let me give you an example that I'm an audiobook user myself, and I have one of these portable playback devices. And typically, what I do is I'll add my audiobook on there, and then I will also have some music on there. And whether I'm walking my dog or driving, somewhere, I'm listening to some content. Sometimes I'm listening to a book and I want to take a break and listen to some music, and so I will cycle through piece of music that I want to listen to. Sometimes on some devices when I come back to the book, it'll pick up where I left off again. Other times on other devices or from other content providers, it won't pick up where I left off. So it's really kind of a complex problem. It's an engineering problem or a software and hardware design problem, so that all vendors, hopefully at some point in the future, will offer this basic functionality of placeholding. Another functionality is bookmarking, so that as you listen to a passage, you can say, I'm really interested in this particular passage. Let's say it's in an educational situation where you're listening to a nonfiction work on a topic of interest or maybe assigned book in a curriculum, high school or college, let's say. And you're listening to it and you want to mark certain passages. Can you do that within your software and hardware configuration? Again, this seems to me to be a key aspect of key functionality of any digital audiobook system. Another thing that is, and I'm a reader of printed books and ebooks, and I'm a listener to digital audiobooks. And one thing is I've sort of pondered the difference between reading a book visually versus listening to a book with your ears. Is the nature of the actual, if your mind wanders or if you miss something or if you didn't quite hear correctly, with audio, with visual, if you miss a sentence or misunderstood a sentence, it's very easy for your eyes to go back and reread that sentence or to focus in on the point that you said, I didn't quite understand that. What was that word there? With audio, once it sort of slips by you in the audio stream, you can't say, well, what was that? What was that last sentence? So the ability to skip back 16 seconds is, I think, very crucial to any of these systems, so that if your mind wanders or, your dog barks in the background or somebody comes into your cubicle or whatever, you should be able to say, oh, I need to go back a little bit here and pick up where I was with this book. So in a lot of the systems, 15 seconds, I don't know how they decide on 15 seconds, but it seems like the 15-second skip back is kind of an evolving sort of basic core functionality of a lot of these systems. Now this next one is really cool. I think this is one of those things that's going to differentiate digital audiobooks from analog audiobooks. It's variable speed playback. With digital audiobooks in a lot of these systems, but not all again, but in a lot of these systems, you can actually speed up or slow down the playback of that digital audio content to meet your needs. So let's say that a lot of people like listening at a faster rate. They're speed readers, they're speed listeners. They can speed up the playback of a book. For other readers, they want to sort of take in that audio content slower than normal for better comprehension. Let's say it's poetry and they want to really dwell on each line, they can slow it down. The advantage of digital audio content over analog audio content is that you can speed it up and slow it down without what I call the Alvin and the Chipmunks effect. You don't get the, you know, Christmas comes at once a year kind of thing. This is wonderful. And so you can choose the playback speed that meets your needs at that time in a lot of these systems. And I just think this is one of those sort of killer functionalities that's going to really make it interesting for digital audiobooks going here on out. Another interesting thing about this is this functionality is really coming out of the blind and visually impaired community. These people have been into speed listening for years. They hardly ever listen to an audiobook at normal playback speed. They're very much into this, and I think the mainstream user population will appreciate this as well.
I do too. Some of the people that I work with, you know, really like that variable speed playback. A really important consideration is abridged versus unabridged. We found with our talking book readers, they didn't even want to listen to anything that was abridged. So in the projects we've worked with, one of the things we check is to make sure that the book we're buying is unabridged.
Yeah, I agree. That's a key consideration about the overall contents available to you. Do you want it to be primarily abridged or primarily unabridged? As I sort of look across some of these master collections that vendors are offering, some of them are offering only exclusively unabridged content. Some are offering primarily abridged content. I don't see much, though. We're not at the point yet where you could sort of choose. Let's say that you had a vendor A and you say, okay, I want to buy for my library or lease for my library the unabridged version of Title X versus the abridged version. I don't see that happening much yet, but I think that's entirely predictable, is that as these collections get larger and more sophisticated, I think we'll see one vendor offering both unabridged and abridged versions of the same book so that you can meet the needs of your library patrons. I mean, the last thing, we could have a really long functional and feature list here, but we just want to touch on some of what we consider some of the main things. The other one is that, you know, another theme for today is the accessibility of these systems and services for all library patrons and all types of libraries. And this might be a good place to point out that, you know, there are a lot of things to consider as your library or library consortium considers developing a digital audiobook service. There's a lot of decision points and options and things, but it all boils down to what I call a gestalt experience for the end user. It's a soup to nuts kind of experience where they're thinking about this thing as, can I get to the website? Can I download the content seamlessly? Can I operate? Can I connect my MP3 player to my computer? Can I operate my MP3 player, well? It's really an overall experience. And when you think about the accessibility of your service, you have to think about every phase of that service. I think maybe one of the weak links right now in a lot of these services is their websites. Sometimes it's difficult for anyone with any kind of visual or physical challenge to navigate through some of these websites. And so think about the overall accessibility of the service that you're offering. And accessibility has different meanings in this context. There's operating system accessibility, there's platform accessibility, as well as visual and physical challenges that the individual patrons might have. So again, this is a really complex but I think vitally important aspect of an overall ebook digital audiobook system. Okay, we have just a few more slides here in this session, and then we got about 6 minutes left, and we'll open it up for some more questions and discussion and thing. But just to reiterate some things we've been talking about here, in terms of how the content is distributed out, how it's going to get from the supplier of the digital audiobook to the user of the digital audiobook. There are several options here. One is to download from the internet. With this method of distribution, the reader finds the content he or she wants and downloads it to his computer. Then it can sort of be redistributed or redownloaded from the computer onto a set of CDs or transferred to a compatible playback device. One thing to be aware of is that audio files are huge. Books in the range of 50 to 100 megabytes are not uncommon, and so you have to think about that download experience. Again, this can be a weak link in a service. Is for some people with dial-up access, for some downloads, they're talking about hours to download those, like an overnight download. And so you really have to think about how easy is it for a person in terms of steps and functionality of the download process, and how long does it take for someone to download content. So downloading from the internet is really an important consideration here as you look at this. Another method that we mentioned already is streaming audio. Basically, there's no download involved. The content is being streamed out over the internet, but you do have to have an internet connection. One advantage of this is that playback begins almost immediately, so you don't have that wait time to wait for the download. So it's kind of the immediate gratification type of thing. And again, some vendors are offering both methods, some are offering only one. It really depends on the vendor. And last but not least, an interesting new wrinkle here is preloaded onto the playback device. These playback devices have gotten to the point where vendors can actually preload the content onto the playback device and then sell the whole package to individuals or libraries. And so one of the companies we'll be talking about in a later session in depth is PlayAway. And basically, they're doing this. They realize that downloading from the internet can be intimidating to a lot of potential audiobook users. And so they're basically preloading their content onto devices, and then they sell the whole package. And their price range is about $35 to $50 per item. And so that's a totally different way to distribute the content. So to summarize, there's internet downloads, there's streaming across the internet, there's preloaded on a playback device. Another interesting thing that we probably will see here in the future is similar to what we're seeing with like a satellite-based radio, we could see satellite-based audiobooks, Sirius and some of those other radio programs. I don't subscribe to those, so I don't really know what they're doing, but I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't offer satellite-based digital audiobooks and other forms of audio content through their services. So that's what we had for this initial thing here. We've got a few minutes left, and speaking of PlayAway, we're going to give away a PlayAway here before the end of this session. So if there are any questions, let's try to address a few of them now, and then we'll give away the PlayAway device, and that will conclude this first session of this day-long Day of the Digital Audiobook.
Tom, let me just give you a couple of the quick questions here, and then we are going to probably have to hold the rest of the questions. Hopefully people can come back to that Q&A session that I mentioned. But one of the questions that we got while you were speaking, hang on just a second, was having to do with people wanting to know what genres are acceptable to users in abridged form. Steve Spazzato wanted to know that.
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm just speculating now, but I think that maybe like business books would be perhaps attractive in condensed forms. Maybe, I don't know, self-help, I don't know. Actually, most of the readers that I've worked with for digital audiobook services are pretty strongly in favor of unabridged titles. And so I can tell you, I mean, just across the board, at least with the group I've been working with, romances, mysteries, sci-fi is popular. Biography and autobiography is very popular genre. I think it's almost too soon to tell which genres will be popular in general in the digital audiobook marketplace, and specifically which genres will be particularly attractive in abridged versions. But my hunch, if I had to make a hunch, I'd say maybe business books and some of those things would be particularly attractive to readers in abridged formats.
Okay, if Tom and Lori, if you're ready to move on, I think we're going to have to shut down the questions for now so that we have a little bit of time before the next session, but I do want to make sure that we get in this giveaway for the playaway. So, Tom, if you could just give me a number, please, between 1 and 159, we'll check to see if that person's here.
For some reason, the number that first popped into my head was 103.
Okay, is Lisa Powell Williams from Moline Public Library?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
Yay, Lisa. I'm so glad you're here. Then you are the winner, and I'm going to type my email address into the text chat box. If you want to send me an email after the session, then we'll put you in touch with Mike Belcito, okay?
Congratulations to Lisa in the Quad Cities. So this will conclude this particular session. Again, we're going to take about an hour break here. It's just one minute past the top of the hour on my computer clock here. We'll reconvene at the top of the next hour. That's 11 a.m. Central Time, noon Eastern, 10 a.m. Mountain, and 9 a.m. Pacific. And in the next session, we'll sort of get into the nitty-gritty of thinking about what libraries need to consider as they think seriously and plan for launching a digital audiobook service. So thanks very much for participating in this first session, and I encourage everyone to come back for the second and subsequent sessions this afternoon, later today. Thanks.